Welcome to the Healing Ourselves, Heals Our Hoods podcast with your own Desiana Torres. This is a place for humbled, open, and transparent conversations with members of our own community. Here you can find diverse testimonies of the oppression and trauma faced on both individual and community levels. Do you want to validate the suppressed emotions you've never had the opportunity to speak about? Interested in breaking the silence? Then let's validate all that you feel right here, right now on this podcast. Let's go. So what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode here. We are going to be talking about mental health, y'all, and how we are always constantly struggling silently, how so many of us got some life experiences that are really powerful, yet we don't always share it because we carry a lot of guilt and shame. And so I'm really excited for this podcast episode, y'all, because the person who's going to be speaking is my best friend, somebody that I went to college with, somebody who's seen me go through my darkest times, and someone that I also witnessed them go through their darkest times. And together, we just really pour into each other. We really are open and vulnerable with each other and the ways that we find it hard to be open and vulnerable with other folks, right? And so I'm waiting for her to tune in. I don't see her joined in just yet, but for the folks who are here, what's up? I see you, Gino. I see you, Tajanae, Thea Mary. Thank y'all so much for joining. What I want to do is utilize the comment section now to tell me, how are you doing today? Like, how's your mental health today? Are you good? Are you okay? Are you struggling? Like, where are folks at today so we know how much y'all need this podcast episode as well? I appreciate you. Thank you. You know, girl, really tried. I did not look like this 20 minutes ago. And then, hey, cousin, I see you as well. Today has been just one of those days where I've been really just trying to pour into myself, you know what I mean? Making time to, go live with. I'm trying to pour into myself. How many of y'all feel like y'all been a little empty on your cup lately? You know what I mean? I think she's joining.
Can you hear me? You're known as Shorty. You one of my closest friends. I see Jasmine in here too. What's up, Jasmine? Shorty is somebody who, she is my wild
friend. Is one of my best friends too from college, UC Davis, Aggies.
Hey. And so if you've been knowing with me for my whole life, since I've been in college, then you also been knowing Shorty, because us, me, Shorty, and Jasmine are like a team. When I was struggling with homelessness, y'all both took me in and I lived with y'all. Since then, we've been inseparable, so I really appreciate our friendship. But what I'm really honored is to have you here, Shorty. Like, I don't think folks know the kind of testimony that you got that's really going to allow for them to find hope and find, I don't want to give your story away, but I know that your story is going to touch many people today who need to hear it. And the reason why I say that is, girl, because the devil was testing you today. And we're going to get to share that in just a second. And so, Shorty, let people know, who are you? Like a quick intro, quick bio of who you are, so that folks can start to understand, who is this person that's talking to them today?
All right. Thank you, Desi, for introducing me and for inviting me on this platform. First and foremost, I am a daughter of God. I believe in the Most High God, Yahweh. So I would like to say that my faith, number one, is like very important to me. I am aspiring veterinarian. I love animals. People will say I'm crazy for animals, like Eliza Thornberry. So that is why I changed my Instagram name to The Wild as Thornberry. I am an auntie. I'm a sister. My grandmother and my mother both rest in peace. So I'm a daughter, a granddaughter, great-granddaughter, you know, and I'm the youngest of 8 children. So my mama had a lot of kids, okay, because my daddy fathered me and another daughter. And I just am somebody that has such intersectionality, because I'm from the hood and I'm holy, okay? So I'm someone that people know as Shorty, but also it's like Esmeralda Rodriguez, like the future Dr. Ez. Like, I have these high aspirations, but I also came from Stockton, which is known as the Mud and Mudville. And if you're familiar with that term, or if you're not, it's like when you come from the streets, from the trenches, from the from nothing. And mud is significant because it's a mixture of solid earth and water, and it like bogs you down. It tries to slow you down. It gets you stuck, right? And it grinds you to a halt. And that is what it's like to be from where I'm from. And to be able to have a platform to tell my testimony in my hood, shout out to Auntie Thea Mary. You're right. 209 is where I'm from. Look, shout out to my sister Carmen that just joined. I'm so excited. So I'm actually wearing a shirt. My niece, whose birthday it is today, Deja, bought me this shirt. It's a Stockton brand, Never Going Broke. Shout out to my city, always represented wherever I'm from. And it says flourish. And it's just like so representative of me because I'm this bubbly personality. But it's like, don't judge a book by its cover, because I can be this person that, oh, I got the degree, but I still came from somewhere that is top 10 on the murder rate, on the homicides and the violence, and top 10, known for all of these negative things. Like, the mud is also slang for drugs. It's also slang for opioids. And that is an epidemic that's happening in my city where I'm from. And it's like, to be able to have a platform to say, yo, I escaped out the mud. It just, yeah. So yeah. I'll give you your chance to ask me some questions, because I got a lot of story to tell you, but I want you to also be able to like facilitate.
Yeah, no, Shorty, you definitely have a testimony, and mind you, I've been with you for half of it. You know what I mean? So it's really empowering to see that you're willing to be so vulnerable today, because I know this is one of your first times ever being on a podcast. And so before we actually get started, what I want to let folks know is that there are going to be triggers in this conversation, okay? I'm letting y'all know way in advance. We're going to be talking about things such as drugs, grief, and the impacts that it really holds on our mental health. And so with that being said, the reason why I wanted Shorty to kind of describe that little intro is because, y'all, let me tell you, Shorty was trying to run away from this podcast episode, y'all. She was really like, nah, can we push it to later? And I'm like, nah, this is your time. And because she had that mindset of like, I'm scared for this opportunity, or maybe I'm scared of being vulnerable, which we all are, because being vulnerable is so scary. Shorty actually fell into the mud today. So while she's talking about she's from the city where, you know, where it's Mudville, Shorty had one of those moments where she kind of was like praying to God and like looking for like some kind of just confirmation that this was her opportunity. Like, she's showing us her bike that she fell off of, rode her ankle on it and everything. And so I'm going to let her share a little bit about that experience real quick. You're on mute.
Okay, now I'm on mute. Okay, so today I was actually coming in the... Oh, no. Before yesterday, it had rained, and I was coming back home, and I felt like, wow, the devil is really trying to stop me today, because I fell face forward on this... Like, I would slid my bike on the cement, but I actually landed in mud. And it was a corner house, meaning that... It was either the mud or the asphalt and the cement, because after that, there's nobody else's yard. It extends just to the street. And, like, I realized for a second the bike had got on top of me. And I'm like, damn, like, I literally have just – I just totaled my car within the last 30 days, just totaled my car. I fell in the fucking – I mean, excuse my language – in the bathroom. Hit my neck, ambulance came to my house and everything. Like, my housemates weren't even home when it happened. I was in a lot of pain. And in that moment, I was like, childhood, like, I hurt. But I said, I gotta just get back up, because I looked around and was no one to help me. And that is often how I felt in my life. In growing up, in my childhood upbringing, there's an age gap. My mother had 8 children. 5 of them grew up that I knew. 2 of them got adopted out into homes when they were younger. And my parents struggled with drug addiction. So my mother is from Stockton, and my father is actually a refugee from Cuba. So my father escaped communism. He's known as Amerilito. And it's very powerful that, like, in Cuba, drugs are so, like, it's so surveillance there that they don't really have a drug epidemic like the U.S. And a lot of countries don't have as much of a drug epidemic like the U.S., right? And we got to take a look at this because this is part of mental health. And I grew up with this drug stigma, like crackheads around at the gas station and things like that. But then also that was my mother and my father that I was ashamed to even like accept. And when you're growing up, you don't understand that as addiction. You don't understand that as mental health. Like that they're just numbing themselves or the opposite, trying to feel feeling, because there's downers and uppers, right? Meaning that there's suppressants like alcohol and weed and things like, and pills, and then there and lean and Zanny, and okay, we hear it in the songs every day. And then the others, what is it, Adderall, cocaine, like, and then they're getting mixed in together. And these things were happening to me growing up around my environment, and not just in the neighborhoods, but in my own family. And that ended up being a downhill spiral, because my brothers were old enough to kind of get out of that, and I was here growing up young in it. My grandmother actually took me out of crack house at 3 years old, because my mother and my father would fight and have domestic violence and all these things, that after 2 years old, I believe my father got incarcerated. And this is a refugee who escaped communism. And most of my family still lives in Cuba. And he was supposed to come here and be like the one that helped save them, right? Get remittances, help bring the family here. I'm first generation. And there's not a lot of Cubans in California. So that's already like, I feel identity. But then looking around me, my own siblings weren't going through these experiences because they were now grown up or living in separate households. And so I now was raised with my grandmother with this identity, like I came from the product of two people that were just drug addicts, crack fiends, crack heads. And I would use these terminologies, not understanding growing up, like this is a person with mental health disorders that is suppressing the shame and the guilt and the blame and their mistakes and all of that, or other things that happened to them they had no control of, getting raped, getting molested, getting kidnapped. My mother has told me that she's gotten kidnapped, gang raped, and all type of things that I never even knew about until I got old enough to understand. And it's crazy because growing up in Southside Stockton, before my grandmother rescued me, I grew up in the crack house was on a street called Wirt Street, which I feel like is almost revelation to my testimony, because all my life, when you grow up like this product of your environment and you see this all around you, you don't have an idea of your own self-worth in terms of your race or ethnicity, because I'm living with my maternal grandmother. She's white. She doesn't tell me very, very nice things about my father, except that he's incarcerated for beating my mom. That's how I got told about my father. Oh, if he ever gets out, he's going to kidnap you and take you to Cuba. When I met my father later on, these were lies. Maybe he was on some domestic violence. He took accountability for that. But it was like I was told all of these things. So now my worth was developed as a product of other people in an environment that I didn't ask to grow up in, but I was still trying to flourish in it, like for real. And I ended up turning to academics and things. I was so bright at an early age, four or five years old. I was already reading like third grade, fourth grade level. I think in third grade, I started reading Harry Potter books, finished all the novels and stuff like that. Third grade, yeah. I was in the GATE program. I was in a school in Stockton on the north side. So north side, south side, we got different parts, but Stockton is just really, it's like a sinkhole. It doesn't matter if there's certain areas that have nice like Lincoln and all this stuff. Like there's a millionaire named AG Spanos from Stockton. They have those nice neighborhoods, but it's still the hood regardless. And I think that I started to try to find my worth in academics because it was so easy, something I was good at. But at the same time, I was at home and I was experiencing, now at 7 years old, I've experienced sexual trauma from a close family member. At, I believe, 9 or 10 years old, I experienced physical trauma from another family member that was struggling with drugs. That's another person that had mental health issues that were not being treated. And so he was doing self-medicating. And as a result, you know, you can be the impact of these people. Like, you can be the punching bag of people around you, even if you are not on drugs. And I had to make a choice in my life, I think, at a young age, when I decided I want to be a veterinarian. And what does it take to be a veterinarian? And I got all these things around me that's telling me to go this way in gangs, to go this way in drugs, to go this way in the streets. Because best believe, my family didn't just do drugs, they also sold it. So it was like there was other paths I could have took. And I just, that wasn't who I felt like my inner soul, my inner being was. At a young age, I could identify this. And so I just started pushing myself in school. But when you push yourself in school, I want you to be able to share some of the things that can happen when you put your worth in something like academics. Because even in the academic world, it's still dog eat dog. I don't think that we realize that until college, though.
I could definitely agree with that, because that's where we met and that's where we were able to kind of experience those things together. And so something that I really recognized when I first met you is that you're very open and vulnerable about your life. Like, it's not like you wait for fall. I think I met you the first day and immediately we just start talking about our traumas, and that's how we were able to kind of understand each other on a much deeper level. And so some of the things that you were saying that I'm gonna highlight for folks who are just joining is that when you were 3 years old, your grandmother came and picked you up out of the crack house and took you in to raise you while your parents were still struggling to figure out themselves. And one thing that I wanted to highlight that you also mentioned was that sometimes a lot of folks use drugs to either numb themselves or to feel something. Because sometimes a lot of folks have been so accustomed to feeling numb that they want to feel pain to know that they're still being able to feel something. And so when you were expressing that, and then you were also bringing on upon sharing some of the traumas that you had as a young girl and all that developing into who you were. And so when you were saying that you found worth in your achievements, it's like that is something that made you feel worthy or gave you opportunity to experience something different than what you were accustomed to or used to or surrounded by. And there's so many folks who are listening today and really tuning in who can understand. Maybe they have a family member who came to mind while you were talking, or maybe they can even relate to having a parent who's also struggling with drugs and the impact that that has on children, right? Because oftentimes it can impact the way that we see love or experience love from our family and our close ones when they are trying to cope with their hidden traumas. And when it comes to you, especially being in college, there was an experience, a life experience that you had from the woman that had raised you. And I remember we were all together this day too. And so I just want you, I know this is going to be a touchy subject, but I would love for you to begin to express to folks what grief looks like for you.
Okay, so first of all, when I got to college, I was 18. So I had a traumatic childhood in which I actually was emancipated unofficially at 16 years old, first of all. And I ended up graduating as valedictorian at 17 and a half, and then got into UC Davis on grants and loans and whatever, right? But I got into UC Davis. I'm from Stockton, California. That's like, yo, I hit the lottery. I'm out of here because I need to get up out the mud. I need to be able to set an example for folks. I need to be able to push myself in a way that, you know, I could have went to a different school and went further, whatever, but UC Davis was the number one vet school at the time for in the world. And I got accepted into their undergrad program. And I thought that that in itself, I got rejection from so many schools. I got rejected from Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. I got rejected from Long Beach. Those were state schools, by the way. I remember getting accepted like Sacramento State, Fresno State. But then I remember like UC San Diego rejection, San Diego State rejection. I'm like, damn. All, and these were coming before UC Davis's came as accepted. And I just, you know, I put a lot of my value in that. Okay, wow. So I got rejected, but look at the school that I did get accepted into. Okay. So now I'm 18 years old. I've been on my own since 16, so I know how to pay bills and live and everything, but I did not have as much freedom or money before in my life. Like, I came from poverty, welfare, you feel me? Like, $300-something a month plus food stamps, if that was what my mom was getting at the time when I was 15, and then I got emancipated and she let me get the check. So that was like how I was surviving from 16 to 18, basically. So I got into school and I got a financial aid check when I got FAFSA and I got a refund. And when you grow up from poverty, sometimes you don't know what to do, how to act. So I went and buy hella shoes, Jordans, of course, LeBrons. I'm a shoe head, okay? Raised with a lot of boys. And I also took on a responsibility, like, I'm gonna pay my grandma's phone bill because she was the woman that raised me or whatever. We did have some falling out because of things that happened in my childhood. And like, one or two of my family members actually ended up physically abusing me and having all of the incarceration issues and stuff. But in the end, my grandmother, my mother always came to, like, my high school graduation. And then I wish my grandma would have came to my college graduation because she passed away during college. And for most people, their grandmother, like, this on my maternal grandmother's side, never got to, unfortunately, meet my paternal grandmother in Cuba. But when your grandmother passes away, that's usually the matriarch. That usually is the person that holds everything together. And you start to see how real envy and stuff works between people. I feel when people pass away, when things are like, let's divide up these finances or whatever, these belongings, or my grandma didn't even leave a house or a car, okay? So people was arguing over petty things. But why it came so tragically was because my grandmother hid from 18 years old to 21 years old that she got diagnosed with congestive heart failure. And I feel like a lot of people's family members, when they get these chronic illnesses or cancer or whatever, what prevents them from telling their family and being transparent and vulnerable is fear. And fear is what prevented me from even using my voice for so long on a platform. And fear is also what prevented me from thinking that I could finish college when I got the news that my grandmother passed away, because I was in my senior year of college when I got that news. But at 21 years old, I became her power of attorney. That was a responsibility that no one guided me to show me or anything like that. And my grandma was my number one cheerleader. She supported me in all the crazy animals that I wanted to adopt and all the animals that I would find on the street and everything and try to take in and give a home or take to the shelter or the vet hospital to get care, because I couldn't let, you know, someone suffer. Animal creature suffer of God. I can't let that, like, that's not me anytime I find a creature. And so my grandma was my mother and my father. And then hearing that news over the phone, it came from my mother. Oh, it was so hard. I remember being with you and Jasmine and going to McDonald's earlier that day. And that's something that in childhood, you go to McDonald's in the hood to play at the play place. And you go to McDonald's to get rewarded for being on principal honor roll or whatever. And I remember it being like a happy day, like you was getting a kid's meal. And then I got a phone call from my mother, like, your grandmother passed away. And I think that a lot of people that have family members with chronic illnesses. I think that drug addiction is a chronic illness, just like congestive heart failure is a chronic illness, just like depression is a chronic illness, just like anxiety and PTSD is chronic illnesses. And I think that all of these chronic illnesses are hitting the U.S. really hard. And guess what? They're hitting our neighborhoods, the people that are from Stockton and Oakland and all of these places that you see on the top 10. And I think that when you get news like that grief and you come from all of this, I've seen people get shot. I've seen drive-bys. I've heard about my friend that was in the football team that got killed and all of these things. But when your grandma dies, it is different. I stopped eating. I remember people came and visited me dropping off food, and I was literally in my head like praying to God that I just kill myself, like literally praying that I could starve myself, stop eating, stop drinking water. But then God was sending me people with food, groceries, dropping off just snacks to eat, protein bars and stuff, like when it gets hard to eat, gift card of food. And I was literally going into a spiral of just constant depression, thinking that I wasn't going to make it because I wanted to join my grandmother, because I really did not feel like I could go on. And this is a crazy feeling in my life. I've never felt, I didn't even feel like this when my mom passed away, and my grandmother was my mom and my father. So it's like, wow, you can imagine. And my grandmother always dealt with my behavioral issues. She would call and brag to the family, though, Esmeralda got all these fucking reports that says that she's defiant in school. And I was the same way in college. Defiant for this, interrupting this, can't sit still. I had undiagnosed ADHD. I had undiagnosed PTSD. I had undiagnosed anxiety. I had undiagnosed depression. All of these things, I never saw a psychiatrist, a psychologist, until my grandma died. I never thought that I could be that weak before. But when suicide shows up in your life, that's when you realize that you do actually need external help, and you're not weak for wanting and needing that and speaking up about that.
Yeah, and so while you were experiencing the grief of your grandma, Jasmine had put in there the pain you had to go through in that phone call. Like, I've never heard somebody cry like that before. And honestly, we didn't even know what happened. We just know that you felt it.
I ran out the house, and I dropped to my knees on the fucking cement, on the ground, fucking crying. Bro, I just wanted someone to run me over right then and there. I just wanted to go out into the street and die.
Yeah, and I felt like so many people can relate to that feeling when you lose somebody who's been so close to you. Mind you, your grandma was like your mom, because that was the one who raised you, so that connection that you have with her was definitely deep too. And so for you to say, like, I no longer found a purpose in living, I feel like a lot of people can relate to that, you know, because sometimes it's like, what is life worth living for? When I remember you saying, all I want is my grandma to see me walk the stage. And the year that you were supposed to graduate is the year that she departed. And how hard that is to accept as a part of your reality, which is what causes us to struggle with our mental health, because then we start being depressed. Like you were saying, at some point you stopped eating. And so when it comes to those life experiences that you have through, I know you've been through a lot that you've already kind of shared already, but when it came to that grief, what did it look like? Did achievements even matter after that? How was your mental health? How were you taking care of or not taking care of yourself?
Okay, so at first, so when I got the news that my grandma had congestive heart failure at 21, it was because my mother slipped it out in a conversation as people with the gift of gab do, like I do have that gift. And so she wanted to tell me because my grandmother was hiding it so that I would not experience like academic, you know, delinquency, whatever. And my mom knows that I respect the truth over anything. So that's why she told me. And honestly, after that, my grades really did slip a lot. I was majoring in wildlife, fish, and conservation biology. And when I was 21, it was my third year, and I became her power of attorney. But at the same time, I had already signed up for a study abroad trip to Cuba to actually discover my identity, to find my family. I was going to go over there and like understand my culture and everything. And my grandma had congestive heart failure at the same time, but I had already signed up. And so I was faced with this decision. So what I actually ended up doing was transferring power of attorney to my sister, Jody Cerny, because she would be in the States. Because when you leave the States, you know, I may not be able to make that jurisdiction, especially when I'm visiting a communist state like Cuba, if my grandmother were to have any medical emergencies, right? And so something that was crazy to me to learn about too was that my grandmother originally had a do not resuscitate order in place, but actually she went into a state about 9 months before she passed away. She had fallen, and my grandmother was so bold that she wouldn't call the ambulance to get help. And so she was calling my Auntie Bev, my mom, like, oh, yeah, just talking regular to people, like, I ate this and whatever. Didn't even tell people that she had fallen until someone went over to visit her, my mother and my brother, Nick, and realized my grandma had fallen and can't get up, but she is so prideful that she would not even call the ambulance or, like, ask people for help and stuff. And so she had gotten from being there for 2-3 days, you can imagine. For 2 or 3 days, like, she urinated and defecated. She was very honest and told me this on herself. And my grandma had an open wound on her leg, an ulcer. And what ended up happening is she got septic shock in the long term, which is E. coli infection of the bloodstream. It's sepsis. Then when it turns to septic shock, I looked at the statistics. It was like about 10% of adults, even healthy ones, it doesn't matter what age, survive when they have septic shock. And my grandma was 83 years old when she got that, right? Her birthday was coming up when she was going to turn 84. So she went into a state where she literally got a PAP machine intubated so she could breathe. She was not able to recognize people. She was in a very dreary state when we visited her in the ICU at San Joaquin Hospital. And she just kept asking for water, water. And it was like, grandma, you can't even drink or eat nothing. Your lungs have fluid on them. Your heart is in failure. Her organs started to shut down. And they were telling all of her family members, but she has so many grandchildren and great-grandchildren and now great-great-grandchildren to come and say their goodbyes to our grandmother. And it was like, oh, wow. That was right after I had, you know, wanted to go to this Cuba trip to discover my identity. But she started showing some improvement, which was shocking, because after you get septic shock and your organs start to fail and your heart is failing already, like, I was praying by my grandma's bedside and people was like ready to say their goodbyes. I brought my service animal with me and would sleep by her side, and some people wouldn't even come to you know, unless it was like visiting hours, but I was staying behind in the hospital. And I think that a lot of people in my family don't understand what I was doing at the time, the sacrifices I was doing, because I didn't have a vehicle at that time. I had my friends drive me there or took an Amtrak to go see my grandmother in the hospital. And I was still in UC Davis, enrolled full-time student, going to chemistry, organic OKM labs, going to physics labs, doing this gruesome thing to my body, to my own mental health, to try to keep going, act like things weren't affecting my ability to perform. And because I'm always been smart, like, you know, having that ego, that pride. And then I really just started having having a crash with my grades, with everything, with not eating, with just, and I started to pray out to God because there was times where I was praying that I would die. And so then I started to pray out to God that I wanted to know him. I wanted to have a relationship with him. I wanted to be able to have a purpose, because my grandma didn't bring me this far. God didn't bring me this far working through her for just if she's take. Guess what? She is out of pain. She was in heart congestive failure, but she lived to 84 years old. And she was alive when I went and found my identity. She improved, and it was a crazy turn of events. She improved to the point that she got to go back home. She went to a care home facility. She went to rehabilitation facility. Then she got to go back home because she said, I ain't dying in one of those old places. My grandma was fierce. I ain't dying in one of those homes. Y'all better take me back to my home, regain her consciousness. I don't need no power of attorney. She was very like, you know, I do independent, strong, fierce woman, and I'm a fighter. And she fought, and she beat septic shock and was out of heart failure miraculously. I don't know about y'all, but the doctors told her she was going to die before that. And I looked up the statistics, but who was by her bedside praying and being used as her vessel? I only asked God to use me. And that is because I literally opened up my heart. When she did pass away, I was like, wow, I felt broken. God, how could you? But then I started to realize, wait, my grandma put all this wisdom and knowledge into me and stuff. And she would always tell me, like, one day I'm not going to be here. She prepared me for this. She told me that, like, I love you to infinity and beyond. And that is why I'm going to be in heaven. And, like, that is the kingdom. That is where I'm going to feel no pain in the promised land. And really, like, I don't want to live till I'm 100. Her mama lived in her 90s and passed away in a care home. And a lot of people in the U.S. treat our elderly by the way, which is so wrong. That's a part of the mental health problem, too.
That part. And while you were going through your mourning process, what ways did you find yourself coping, both healthy and unhealthy? Because I feel like when it comes to grief, so many folks don't care how you feel better. You just want to feel better. And oftentimes that the ways that we depend on for our mental health, we think we're helping ourselves, but oftentimes we could be altering the way that we are, like altering our improvement or preventing our improvement to exist, or preventing ourselves from actually processing and experiencing and letting ourselves feel what's happening. And the reason why I ask this question is because I already know the answer, but I think a lot of folks can really benefit from the realness that you carry and share that with the folks. How did you cope?
So I was reading some of the comments and listening to you at the same time. So I got notes for this. But so when your grandma dies, you are devastated. And this could be when your partner dies, when your child dies, when your mother or father dies, whoever your maternal or paternal figure is, or, you know, a spouse. And so I was devastated at first, and I was unexperienced, and I was uninformed about mental health. And so at first, I didn't think I needed therapy or anything. So it was, I'm going to continue to do what I was doing in college when I would have these needs to have outlets other than school, right? And so it was like promiscuity. I was sleeping around with whoever I felt like I chose. And I thought that that was cool. Player, I'm a female player, whatever. You know what I'm saying? Drinking, partying, smoking weed. I take Adderall prescribed, but even taking more of my dose than I'm supposed to in the day. To feel productive if it's like a depressing day, drinking coffee, energy drinks. Sometimes I would hit things, objects. Like in my childhood, I realized I would hit walls and things like that. I would do things to find adrenaline. I've jumped out of an airplane 3 times. It's going skydiving. Like, I wanted to feel alive again. And there was also healthy things that I started to do, though. I started to buy a lot of Joyce Meyer books. I started listening to podcasts. And this is a rule I made for myself. A good friend of mine, Sunny, told me, before noon, she does not listen to rap music or anything like that because it infiltrates our mind. And you know what I started doing? Putting on gospel music and putting on podcasts that were motivational to what speaks to my spirit and my soul about the world of veterinary medicine, and waking up motivational words, writing things on the mirror, scriptures to myself. Saying things to myself like, I am worthy, I am valuable, I do have a purpose. Even if I came from all of these things, I started writing spoken words in my notes on my phone, because sometimes it was hard for me to even want to journal, but I realized that I needed to get that out too, because therapy is talking, but writing is also therapy. And sometimes we don't want to write things down. It feels like too automatic, like school. But how many times do we text people and we scroll on Instagram and we write captions and whatnot and we read all these things? And so I said, you know what, I'm going to start writing notes to myself in a poetry form. That is a sound that even is like, I don't really hear that in this city. And when I hear that, I'm like, oh, stop then. Oh, shit. It's like PTSD for real. Crazy.
I just thought of that life experience where I remember when I was living in my car, and then y'all found out, you and Jasmine, you was like, y'all was like, bitch, if you don't just move into the, move in. And the reason why I bring that up, because I relate to your grandma when she was at her rock bottom and was too prideful to ask for help, because something I witnessed always growing up was my mom saying, no, we don't ask for help. We do not ask. We figure it out. And I've witnessed that pride for my mom, and then I've also witnessed for my grandma. So then you just get accustomed to that mindset. So I remember when I was living with y'all, I remember being in Jasmine's room, because that's where I put my little futon on in. And I remember when I was going through a heartbreak, and you was like, bitch, if you don't get ready, like, we about to go to the club and we finna go out and we gonna dance. Like, seriously, we was really gonna yike everything. Yeah, if y'all know Shorty, Shorty is the queen of dancing. And
yike.
But you were really trying to get me to go out and experience, or to, like, distract myself in that way. But what was I doing instead? And he was like, what?
Look, y'all, Desi was weirdo. She was writing in her journal, dear God, I'm going through this. And you know what? Those same journals is in her book that she got on Amazon and in Barnes & Noble today, and is testimony, because she said, I don't want to go to the strip club. I don't want to go to the frat party. I want to get vulnerable, get isolated, get consecrated with the Most High God, because I know who my father is that I turn to when I need comfort and I'm going through something. I don't go to the alcohol and the drugs, because I saw what that could turn into. And I started to realize there was something different about Desi, and it started to get me curious about my own faith, because I did not go to church. My grandma was Jehovah's Witness, y'all. I told her at 7 years old, I am not about to be Jehovah's Witness. I ain't going to those meetings no more. Okay. And then I had a friend that was Catholic. Oh, yeah. I would go up there and be like, no bread, no wine. Okay. I am not I did not do catechism. But I was in these different spaces. And it was like, I was still getting a choice. My family in Cuba, Santeria, like, they were all praising God in their culture, their way. And I saw something different in those people, like resilience. And I saw humility, and I saw strength in that. And I saw power. But what the world sees, the flesh sees, that's weird. But what I saw in her soul, because I connect on people on a soul level, was like, wow, she's really like prospering in a way, in a week, like she's in a weak time, but she doesn't appear weak though. So then that started making me wonder, like, how do I try to find a relationship with God? Because that makes you want that, right? Like, now you want this transactional, because you see someone else with it, or like, wow, they went to the struggle like this, so I want to try that.
And I think that's the most powerful point, because I remember you and Jasmine being like, girl, if you don't close that laptop, I think I was watching Joyce Myers and taking notes too. And y'all were just laughing, like, you really sitting here listening to this old lady talk when you could be getting dressed and going out with us. And I was like, yo, I'm just in a place where I just want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Feel what I'm going through. And I think that relates to where you are now, too, because you're also someone who journals and you listen to sermons and you try to really feed yourself spiritually, because you notice that what it does beyond all things, it really does provide a sense of hope. That someone is out there, someone really is listening to you when you feel no one else is there, no one else is listening. And so when it comes to experiencing so many forms and different forms of trauma, I think what we forgot to do is let ourselves feel. We forget to just sit in our pain and experience all that our body wants to experience. Oftentimes we prevent ourselves from crying. We're like, no, don't cry. Or maybe you just hold it all in, or maybe you put it under a rug, which is something that we've been taught. And when you start to get older, you realize that what you put under that rug is going to start crawling out at one point. And I would love for you to talk about the space that you are in now, and how even now you still experience life in the same way, but your perspective and your mindset about how to navigate through it is differently.
So now I'm the weirdo that watches the sermons, that takes the notes. I journal to myself. I talk out loud to God. I tell people about God in the grocery store, in my household. I tell people about God. And I also have a relationship with God in a way that I had to realize I had to choose faith over fear. Because they can coexist, but you can only let one lead you. And so I realized that before, when I was letting fear lead me, those were the thoughts that crept in my head of suicide. I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy enough to be loved. I come from a product of addicts. Like, I come from Stockton, California. Like, I already have this, you know, bottom of the barrel, like, I have a disadvantage in life type of mindset about myself. But then when I decided to choose faith over fear, I broke out of that. It was like I could see things in a different perspective. I could see how my adversities shaped who I became, to be able to push myself to tell people about resiliency, to tell people that you can't get through these dark tunnels and these valleys, to tell people that that is what is shaping your character, to tell people that now I ask for situations like, Lord, teach me patience. And guess what? It's not going to be, oh, I'm going to get that patience characteristic. A trial and a tribulation is going to come. A couple of them. Maybe you might even get the same one over and over again until you learn. And it's like God can give you grace. But now when you have sought the kingdom and you think of God in a different way, now you have a different responsibility. And so I got humbled, because sometimes I would think, oh, I'm just going to watch these sermons. I'm going to take notes. I'm going to journal. I'm going to pray. I'm going to, you know, give my 10, 20%. And then I realized that, like, I would get seasons of like, oh, I'm getting blessed. Like, I'm feeling myself and I got a good job at UC Davis. It's paying me back. Then it was like 27 an hour. And I was just an assistant, like a vet assistant. And it was like, you can have benefits, or you can opt out of the benefits and get more money in your retirement. All these different things that was like, wow, I love this job. And I thought life was good. And I was reading all these books. And then I realized, oh, wow, healing is not linear. Because life started hitting me again. And I was like, what was I doing? I was going back to the old coping mechanisms. And so I had to make different changes. I had to create different routines and habits. So things that I started doing for myself, other than praising God, I got out in nature. I walked around and admired the beautiful things that I felt God created. I started speaking to my friends more in conversations that were vulnerable, not just like talking and complaining, but like talking to them about how they grow up out of their struggle, out of their mud, because I feel like everybody got a type of mud that we get out of, right? Like, this is my testimony, but other people are struggling with something else right now that is a different mental health component, but nonetheless, it needs, you know, it needs to be validated and treated. And also, I feel like people just need to be seen and heard. And so I started really challenging people to be more vulnerable in their own lives and being intentional. And so I have a lot of conversations with people about this. And I even talk about openly like this in group therapy. And I talked to a therapist about this. And I talk to all my friends and things. I'm very open now about when I am going through these mental health journeys and battles. I tell people freely like I'm going through it so that they could know the signs, and also I can know the signs within myself. Like, I'm starting not to eat as much, so now I need to go make sure I have some food in the fridge and stuff so that I just make it accessible to myself. And I have to put things intentionally around that I can read so that I can have reminders for myself that I am valued, that I am loved, that I do have a big purpose. And that things like me falling in the mud are not going to stop me. Things like where I come from and who I come from, the start doesn't determine the finish. The finish is victory. I know that. So I just feel like I'm not perfect. You know, I still sometimes smoke marijuana and cope in different mechanisms like that. But then I also turn on a song and just dance. I listen to music and sing it out loud at the top of my lungs sometimes, even if I'm biking or walking around the neighborhood. And I talk to people, and I share things on my Instagram stories and talk to people in ways that, like, they feel comfortable talking to me about things that traumatic, that some people, even their closest family members, don't even know, and they come to me and talk about it. So I think I just really started connecting with community, and that is why I was consecrated and isolated in a time, a period, because these character traits were developing in me so that I could be used in this way.
I feel like so many people would relate to sharing that, because the comments just started going crazy. I appreciate your vulnerability to share in the ways that you used to cope and the ways that you cope now, because I feel like when it comes to coping, we keep that silent. Some of us would literally die with some of the secrets that we have and the ways that we coped, from pain, from abandonment. I mean, from many things that we experienced in our life. And so when it comes to mental health and it comes to the ways that we cope, what we often hear and recognize is that some of us may have never had that example of what it's like to help maintain good health or help yourself get up when you've experienced something traumatic. Because like Shorty was saying, oftentimes when you live in a hood, you are already experiencing so many different levels of violence and grief on many different levels. And it don't hit the same when it's someone who's close to you or someone who's raised you. Like, you still mourn, but it just hits so much different. And so when we have those moments and those situations, how are we coping through it? How are we showing up for ourselves? How are we living for ourselves? There's no judgment in the ways that you cope, because we all understand that our access is often very limited to the healthy coping skills that we got. So something that I really appreciate that you shared was how you went from a place and the ways that you used to cope, Shorty, to like where you are now and the ways that you're being able to cope and help yourself feel. One of the things that I really loved is how you were talking about how you used to dance. Like, every time I think of Shorty, I think of the way that she dances, and the way that you dance is so liberating. Oh, it looks like she was disconnected for a little bit. But the way that she dances is so liberating, because she dances and really, like, allows herself to be in tune with her body. And dance is a form of healing that our ancestors used to engage in. When they had, you know, healing circles, and they would dance in circles and just release all the tension that they carried within their bodies. And so what I'm really appreciative right now is the fact that Shorty gave some tips for us to be able to take home with ourselves. She said, surround yourself with reminders, with positive reminders. And what that can look like something that I do that's helping me right now is I write down positive affirmations that I really connect to, and I could tape them up on my bathroom mirror. So every time I brush my teeth, after I finish brushing my teeth, I make it a routine to be like, I'm speaking life into myself today, because I already know myself enough to know that when I leave this, or when I continue on with my day, I'm going to be fighting myself mentally and fighting all these negative thoughts that are just so intrusive. And so how many people can relate to that when we have all these thoughts that are negative, that are maybe questioning our worth or questioning our purpose or questioning the goals that we have for ourselves? And sometimes when you get so lost in your thoughts, y'all, you start to believe that it's a real part of yourself. Like, you begin to accept the lies that your head's telling you. And something that I tell folks all the time is, something that helps me remember that my mind is just my mind and it's not really saying what's true, is that in my head, I'm like, you cannot raise your hand. You can't raise your hand. I keep saying it in my head, you cannot raise your hand. And then I allow myself to raise my hand. And what that does is allow for me to recognize, like, hold on, my mind just lied to me, because my mind told me that I couldn't do this and I'm doing it right now. And so I share that as a reminder with us as we go on with our life and as we go on with our mental health and really trying to be in tune, or maybe we're fighting depression, maybe we can't get out of bed, like whatever it is that you are feeling, be in tune and listen to your body. If you feel like your body just needs to stay in bed for a day or two, cool, listen to your body, allow yourself to really be in tune that way, but don't stay there. That's where I don't want folks to be comfortable in sitting in that pain so much so that you can't see the brighter day. And so, okay, I see Shorty trying to jump back. I'm going ahead and add her as well. And then together we'll close off with this amazing podcast that I really appreciate her. Let's see if she can join in right now. There she go.
I was listening to you, though. Sorry, my phone was dead.
Oh, it's okay, Mama. So you came back just on time, because I was just letting folks know how you were talking about surrounding yourself with positive reminders. And I know you surround yourself with scriptures. You're surrounded personally with all these signs that you're able to focus on and pay attention to. That's another thing, y'all. There's so many signs around us that when you pay attention, you're like, damn, somebody's speaking to me today. And those are gentle reminders for us to be able to be in tune with ourselves. So, Mamas, before we close off, is there anything else you want to leave to our listeners today? Some advice, just any positive note?
Well, first of all, I always say, like, chase your passion and don't be afraid to be weird, because I'm the weirdo that loves animals, and like, they've been my emotional support, and they've guided me also through a lot of the journeys, and I've been able to even prophetize off that God-given talent and in ways where I'm like, you know, self-employed and feeling more confident in myself. But what I would say to people is that they have to truly want to have a relationship with God, and not just think of God as someone that's transactional or someone that has no influence on their lives, because we do have free will, but we also do have mercy and grace and things that I believe that if we stop and pay attention, we can actually be able to hone in and identify these things, and even identify in how our trials and tribulations are causing us to develop these characteristics to be able to live in our purpose. That really is His purpose. But, you know, we are just like the vessels that are working. And I think that I would say, I start my day with Him, and I end my day with Him, not just praying, but like, I even listen to meditations just on scripture. And, would say that I go to Him now before I even go to complain on social media, on group chat. I go to God instead of going to the homegirl and the pass out or whatever, or post about it and get Twitter fingers and all these things. I started going to God out and writing about it, praying about it, talking out loud about it. I don't care if I look crazy, because you know what? I can look crazy, but you can't take my faith and the wisdom I have gotten and the guidance and the strength I have gotten. I can only attain the glory to the Most High. And that is why He uses me, because I've stopped saying that I will not be afraid. I will feel fear. And despite that, I'm still going to be courageous and use this voice and use these talents and get up out the mud. Like, I got to get up out the mud. I can't just stay there and lay there and be like, I'm sinking. Because guess what? Sometimes you are going to look around you, and ain't nobody going to be there to help pick you up. Sometimes the only safety net is God. And guess what? Even when it only feels like it's you by yourself, I can really attain to this, y'all. I was in the mud today. I got a swollen ankle. My car is totaled. I got hella problems. But guess what? I'm still giving glory to God, because I'm still here. And I could have been taken out in so many ways, including when I told myself that I wasn't worthy and was going to commit suicide. And if that happened, guess what? I wouldn't have been talking to you guys today. And I just got a totally different version of grief when I did get the call that my mom overdosed on May 1st, 2021, which is another trial that I'm going through. My mother overdosed in the streets of Stockton, California, just 2 years ago, the week before Mother's Day. And I stopped, dropped to my knees, and I started crying. I was at a kid's birthday party, one of my friend's birthday party, child. And I gave praise to the Most High God, because she's no longer suffering. And I had a relief taken off my check. And I just literally thanked Him in my response to grief, and my ways of coping and everything have been so different. When that trauma should have took me out too, or tried to, right? Like, I should have started thinking, and then I didn't allow myself to. So I'm still chasing my dream chasing, and being vulnerable and transparent. And I encourage others to stop being ashamed to share these stories, because I was ashamed when I was younger. And now I'm so proud to tell my story. And I know my grandma, my mom are so proud, and all my ancestors on my dad's side and everything are so proud. So.
Yeah. So proud, and I am so proud, because I know how hard it is to be vulnerable. Like, you were telling me, oh my God, my stomach hurts right before we went live, and I was like, mine hurts every time. Like, sometimes that feeling is just a feeling. Don't allow for it to don't allow that fear of the unknown to prevent you from being able to use any platform to share your story, because you never know who's listening, who really needed that message today. You know what I mean? And so I appreciate you for being one of my special guests. I hope you can tune to another episode, because I really appreciate your realness and your rawness and how authentically you exist. And I know this was not easy for you, but I really appreciate ways that you come on here to help inspire other folks who are going through it mentally, to remind them, like, some days, you know, you are going to be by yourself, falling in the mud. Sometimes there is going to be nobody to reach out to. But in those moments, don't give up. Like, you have the tools from previous testimonies or experiences that you've been through to help yourself get up. Now, don't also be ashamed to ask for help. Now, if you got people around you and you got a good support team and you have that pride, like I mentioned before, and that Shorty's grandmother also experienced, don't let that pride stop you. Allow for yourself to be surrounded by such genuine company, such a village to help pick you up when you need that help. And I think being intentional with who you surround yourself with is going to be beautiful. And shout out to Carmen. I see her. She's on.
Shout out to Carmen. That's my sister that I found, y'all. She is an adoptee. I mentioned her in the beginning of the story. This is my sibling, full blood sibling, same mom, same father. And my dad only has two children. And she is from half Cuban side too. And like, I found her. And guess what? I wrote about that in my journal, and praise God, and always had faith that I was going to find my brother and my sister. And I found Manuel too. And I'm just so happy that they can become my community, as well as my family started a group text, y'all, group message. There's like 14 people in it. I've never seen my family this functional in a group message before, but I was praying for that. Wow. Won't God do it? Yes, he will. Even when you think he won't, he will. Okay? Stop doubting.
I feel like that's a great way to close out. Stop doubting. So I appreciate you all so much for tuning in. Stay tuned for next week's episode. I don't know who's speaking yet. I got to check my calendar, but the flyers are always coming out. If you're interested in being a guest speaker, please tune in. If I have availability, I definitely will book you. If not, let me know if there's another topic that you're interested in. But remember, storytelling is so empowering because we're able to exchange wisdom through other people's experience, whether you live through it or not. And so I appreciate y'all every week for tuning in with us and really allowing for this platform to exist for folks to come through and really share their stories. So a huge shout out. I always give a shout out to us, but we shouting out y'all as well, because without y'all, this really wouldn't exist.
Thank y'all for tuning in. Thank you, Desi, for inviting me on this platform and for giving me the space and security I needed to just be authentic. Like, I felt really comfortable, and I love that you continue to use your talent to be able to get stories out, because you got a book coming up with your stories coming up. Hey.
I am working on a new book, y'all, for those who've been tuning in for my other book. My new book this time, Shorty, listen to it. It's more storytelling. It's not poetry. It's full storytelling. And I'm telling y'all, it's fire. Like, not to hype myself up, you know what I mean? Because I can hype myself up. And so I'm really excited for y'all. It's going to be released this year. So it's coming.
Wait on it. The marathon continues.
It always does. Thank y'all so much. Tuning in. We love y'all. Be safe, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you again for tuning in with my podcast, Healing Ourselves Heals Our Hoods. Don't forget to subscribe and turn on your notifications for future episodes that will be full of authentic storytelling by members of our own community. You can find me on Instagram at CONFI_DEZ. If you haven't already gotten your copy of my poetry book titled The Becoming of Her, be sure to get yours today. We forget that reading is just as reflective and powerful. I'm sending lots of love and peace and light to you all. May we continue to heal ourselves and each other every day.